our podcast, Could Have Sworn My Parents Loved Me. I'm one of your hosts, Sarah.
And I'm your other host, Evelyn. We're going to share a couple of our stories, which coincidentally ended up being about parents, or more specifically, how we could have sworn they loved us, but really just fuck us up.
Okay, so let's just hop into it. Evelyn is a third-year English major. She's going after the creative writing concentration, and she's also a film minor. She's lived and traveled all over the world, Africa, Europe, Asia, North America, much more than I have traveled ever in my life. She's been collecting stories in many mediums, including film, oral history, and literature. She's a partner in a production company, so she's been instrumental in producing several documentaries as well as feature films. And she's passionate about revealing surprising perspectives on people and places in order to raise awareness about the global social issues that keep her awake at night. So, here you go.
Okay, so I'm going to share an excerpt of a story called August Moon. Even before she could speak, she communicated with penetrating eyes. But at three, she could deconstruct my faulty parenting with astonishing precision. When you say that Jasmine is a good listener, it makes me feel like you're comparing me to her, and that makes me really, really sad. She didn't have words or strategies, however, to articulate what she saw or felt when she lost control of her imagination. Shadows scare most kids, but to her, they not only resembled monsters, they came alive. They had names, wants, and desires she couldn't ignore. We wrote her first stories, sweating beneath her sheets as she tried to describe each character that invaded her overactive imagination. When Pyromania, a skeleton with a gas mask, glowing red eyes, yellow kitchen gloves, wanted to set the room on fire, we drew a swimsuit on her and put a water hose in her hand. We played Pyromania's favorite music. She danced around the room, spraying water at Jacket Man, a headless strangler with nails made of actual nails. Her book was filled with her shadowy characters. Maybe if I had harnessed the power of stories sooner, I could have saved my middle school bully from a broken nose and instead turned him into the buffoon he really was. I could have dressed him in a pink tutu with big clown tears and a quivering lower lip, because bullies have stories too. Instead, coming out of art class in eighth grade, I heard, "Oi, Bombay mix, go back to your fucking country," come from the mouth attached to the nose that exploded against my knuckles. Sometimes, all it takes for her imagination to turn dark is a small injustice or a frustration, just the friction between expectation and reality. When I found her wailing into her pillow after school one day, I held her trembling body, grateful there was no sign of blood, hers or anyone else. She cried for over 40 minutes, rehashing the buildup of one small injustice after another that were now just too much to bear. "I can't stop crying. I'm so sad that I'm sad because today was such a bad day." Why was it so bad? First, I stubbed my toe. Then my teacher didn't choose me, but I had the right answer. Then Cora knocked my lunch pail on the floor. Then she got mad that I was mad. Then I thought about all the bad things that might happen next if it carried on being a bad day. Like what would happen if my teacher got poked with scissors in her thighs, or Jacketman strangled Cora with his long, scary nails, or something bad happened to you and you didn't come to pick me up, or the car crashed. Now I have a headache and I just can't stop crying. She wouldn't take deep breaths with me, so I started to make up a story so she wouldn't feel sad about feeling sad.
That was really great. It was like so like moving, and I really love the relationships you build in that story. And for my first question, I just wanted to know what specifically like inspired you to write this story.
This was a workshop prompt to tell a story of an inner life. So in the workshop, we read The Other Place by Mary Gateskill, in which the father tells of noticing that his son is showing the same sort of violent, misogynist tendencies as he has. And so that's like the other place that they share. And so that was the inspiration for this piece. And in this piece, the mother and the daughter have a powerful imagination and a tendency for sort of lashing out violently at injustice. And the mother uses stories to help her daughter to take control of her imagination.
How did you, like, straddle that line between, like, kind of realism and fantasy, like, specifically with a child's, like, imagination? Why did you, like, go that route in the story?
What I try to do is just remain grounded in details. Like, whatever element seeps into the story, whether it's fantasy or magic, I think just I'm trying my best to stay with the details, and I think that grounds it.
Based on your story, there's, like, a lot of focus on stories and, like, the power of storytelling. So, like, what has been, like, that importance of stories and the act of storytelling in your own life?
Well, to be honest, I didn't really read much literature growing up, but stories were a constant in my childhood. My grandfather worked on ships. He was a cook, and he worked on ships in the Indian Ocean. And he would tell us, like, embellished stories of his adventures. And he would mix in, like, Aesop's fables and his anecdotes and create these weird stories. And he would serialize them so that, like, we would beg to go back to his house to listen to the next installment. And as a parent, I kind of set myself up for the same tradition. So now I'm expected to tell, like, a compelling story every night. To a critical audience.
And then just my last question, I feel like a lot of stories that are, like, kind of centered around, like, violence or violent thoughts, they just usually are, like, on, like, older people or, like, maybe, like, a male protagonist. So why did you choose to write a story where it's, like, a really focused, like, on a young female child?
It wasn't a conscious decision to push against any norm, but just to tell a human story, I think. I think as humans, we have a huge array of emotions, and violence isn't exclusive to men. Maya Angelou references Terence when she speaks about what it means to be human. She says, "I am a human being. Nothing human can be alien to me." And, you know, I do believe that we have this capacity. For every heinous crime that's been committed, we have that capacity within us. And I think, you know, likewise, we have the capacity for the most amazing displays of compassion. And it just boils down to the choices that we have. So I don't shy away from violence or the heinous, but I try to understand the impulses and to consider the agency that the characters that I create, the agency that they have in the face of those impulses. Well, I'm excited to hear your story. As a quick introduction, Sarah is a third-year English major with a creative writing concentration and a gender studies minor at UCLA. She's lived in Los Angeles, California, her entire life. She's spent much of her time dedicated to engaging in and examining pop culture mediums like film, television, and video games, which is why she's also the contributor for the Gendertainment section of the UCLA magazine Femme. As a Latinx member of the LGBTQ community, she also enjoys writing stories, exploring these aspects of her identity in deep, funny, or subversive ways, as well as writing from the fictional, fantastical, and magically realistic genres. Sarah will be reading 16 and Pregnant with the Messiah, a modern-day biblical-themed pregnancy story. Take it away, Sarah.
Thank you for that introduction. From the moment her parents had named her, Mary Magdalena Morales knew she was destined to be fucked over by life itself. Her parents had chosen her full name to honor two famous women from the Bible, Mary, the mother of Jesus, and Mary Magdalene. For Mary, however, she saw it more like an alliterative comic book nightmare. Because of her name, she thought the world viewed her only in two ways, saint or sinner, virgin or prostitute. And now, like some 16-year-old star of a Greek tragedy, all her suspicions felt vindicated. She was a pregnant virgin who her mother accused of being a whore. Currently, her mother was running about the house, yelling as she prepared to throw her out. Mary's pregnancy had recently begun to show, so her secret was known. She sat near the door with its gigantic crucifix hanging above, cradling her baby bump. She tried to memorize the sight of her neighborhood and enjoy the trademark California heat. She believed that, like her older brother, Santiago, she would no longer be welcome here. Her mother stormed in and dropped another bag at her feet. That's the last of it. She tapped her foot expectantly. Well, anything to say? No, not really, Mary deadpanned, standing to leave. Her mother shot out her hand, latching onto Mary's wrist. Hold on, mija. Mary stared blankly, waiting for more. Her mother exhaled in annoyance. Just tell me the truth. I already did, Mary said, trying to rip her arm away. Mentirosa, why are you protecting this man? He defiled you, stole God's precious gift from you, and he certainly isn't marrying you. He's cast you aside like some cheap puta. Just tell me who this pendejo is already. Was it Gabriel from down the street? That old perv Joe? I'm not lying. I haven't slept with anyone. Your oso preciosa Virgin Mary had this happen to her, so why won't you even consider... Mary's mother slapped her across the face, stopping her self-defense. She held her cheek as her mother spat, "How dare you mock our Divine Lady?" She pointed to the crucifix. "Apologize to our Lord. Stop being so disrespectful like your joto brother." Mary finally snatched her arm away from her mother's clutches. "Santiago had the cojones to not give in to your bullshit. I'd rather be like him than anything like you." She grabbed her bags, going to the door and holding the knob. "Adios, Mom. Enjoy not knowing your grandkid." Mary opened the door and walked out, leaving her mother seething with rage. At the rusted gate, she heard her mother yell, "Get back here, you rude little..." Suddenly, as Mary's mother moved forward, the earth shook, delivering another trademark of California life. And as she prepared to walk past the doorframe, the old loose nail holding the crucifix dislodged and caused a crash down onto her mother's face. She screamed in pain as it impacted with her nose. She cursed profusely as blood flowed from the injury. Mary stood shocked before bursting into laughter and resuming her escape. She rubbed her belly as she giggled, glad for the temporary amusement before worrying about where she would go next. Maybe God is on our side after all.
Right, thank you. That was really well read. This story in particular and your body of work in general really subverts traditional ideas of Catholicism, gender roles, homophobic tropes, often in a humorous way. How do you balance this humor and the seriousness of the subject?
Well, I guess I kind of just look at it how I look at a lot of kind of life itself. It's like everything's a dark comedy. Like, you just have to look at, like, the darker moments, find the light. I kind of sounding like a Kingdom Hearts quote right now. but yeah, just find comedy in those darker moments and just, like, so you can look back and, like, laugh at yourself later instead of regretting what you've said before or done or seen.
Quite critical about the religion. Do you intentionally approach it through humor?
Yeah, it's because I was raised for many years as a Catholic, so I went to Sunday school, church a lot, and then from like first grade all the way till my senior year of high school, I was just in a Catholic school. So I just kind of like to look at it in like a humorous way, like with all my sarcastic thoughts as I grew up. So yeah, I just like to like look back on that and just like see what I can find like funny about it, or what I thought back in my head, like, oh, that was stupid. That this Bible thing is dumb. That's sexist. I just want to approach it from that lens.
Yeah. Obviously, the question of faith is central to this story, and it's interesting that the story ends with like a divine intervention. I'm curious, how did you decide on that ending, and what does it allude to about what you think of faith?
Well, I guess I wanted the story, like, very intentionally to kind of be ambiguous, kind of like faith in a way, like, where you, like, you can, like, believe it one way, or can you believe the other, like, accept the situation, or, like, be like, no, that's stupid, that's not realistic. So, yeah, I was trying to go for that, and it was really funny to, like, get the feedback on my story, because I wrote it for a workshop, and, like, a lot of people were, like, you know, I think you should make the ending more clear. Like, you should insert a scene where, like, the Mary getting impregnated by God, so we know for sure that's what happened. And, like, I was kind of disagreeing with that in my head, because I was like, I wanted to be ambiguous so you don't know what the whole situation actually was. So, yeah, I wanted it to reflect faith. Like, you can take it or leave it. You don't need to have all the details.
Right. That's a choice that you make. So how did you straddle the line between the realism and the fantasy?
I guess I just tried to, like, ground it in details that are kind of subtle, but they're possible, but you can also, like, question it, because, like, the whole ending with, like, the cross, like, it's possible, because, like, it's California, so, like, there can be an earthquake at any time, but then it's like very convenient right at that moment. So I just wanted to really straddle that line between the two subjects. Like, as I already said, it's like ambiguous. You don't know which way mm-hmm. it's supposed to be.
Okay, so I think we're going to wrap up with our special segment, How Our Parents Fuck Us Up. Sarah, you'd like to share a few stories and anecdotes?
Yeah, so we have a few anecdotes to share about, I guess, our own childhoods or, like, in Evelyn's case, like, her own parenting. So I have I'll just share two quick stories. Like, my first one, I was with my dad at UCLA. It was, like, Bruin Day, so, like, there's all these, like, booths. And I hadn't told him that I was bisexual yet. And, like, he, like, went to the bathroom, and I saw the LGBT center, like, table. And, like, I tried to sneak over while he was in the bathroom to, like, look at the flyers and stuff. And he saw me, but he didn't say anything. And then later we got back to the house, and, like, he was just, like, kind of silent for a while. He, like, grabbed one of the posters that had, like, the acronym on it, and he just, like, put it in my face, and he's like, which one are you? And it was a very weird way to, like, be out to your parents, but, like, I guess I don't know why I was always scared to tell him, because he's a very generally liberal, but it was an interesting way for him to find that out. And then I guess my other story really quickly is, I do not like carbonated drinks like soda or anything. And I would also like to blame this on my father, because one time when I was like maybe 4 or 5 and he probably took me to a movie, I'm not sure which one, but it was probably inappropriate because he had no filter. It was like, okay, you can watch any movie you want as long as it's not straight up pornography or like one of the Saw films. That was like his only restrictions. But like we were at a movie and I guess I wanted a drink, and I wanted water specifically, and he went over, came back from like outside, he handed me the drink, and when I drank it, like I just took a giant sip, and it was like 7-Up, so there's all these like bubbles, like carbonate bubbles right in my mouth, and I like spit it out like all over the theater. And I was just like coughing, and it was horrible. And I remember that vividly, and I still don't like any carbonated drinks or soda. So.
Oh, how your father's fuck us up. It's a funny story.
And what did you want to say?
When I thought about this, I actually went and asked my kids how I'm fucking up their lives. And my 6-year-old daughter says, you won't let me have my own phone or get an ear piercing. My teenage daughter said, you refuse to let me buy a motorbike with my own money or get a nose piercing. And my teenage son said, sometimes I think, nag, and sound just like you.
Oh, my God.
So that's how I'm fucking up their lives. And we invite the audience to comment and share their anecdotes of how their parents are messing with their lives.
At us, like, with that funny... I don't know, darker stories, whatever, dark humor, whatever you want.
In the comments.
Yes, in the comments. And to close, Evelyn will just read a quick poem about parenting by Philip Larkin.
They fuck you up, your mom and dad. They might not mean to, but they do. They'll fill you with the faults they had and add some extra just for you.